The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 74 for October 16th, 2006. Folks, welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. Man, that hurt my throat. Holy smokes. How are you, John?
My ears. You drink some extra coffee tonight?
No, I've got a cold today. So.
So it's the antihistamines?
No, actually, I haven't taken anything. It's interesting. It's the first cold I've had since I stopped eating dairy, whatever it was, 6 months ago. And so I almost didn't know that I had a cold. But anyway, my throat isn't doing so well. Which is great because John emailed me earlier today and told me that he had been to the Digital Life show last week on behalf of TMO and had all kinds of stuff to talk about, which is just great because that way John can carry some of the load here for me.
Give me a rest.
You can give me a rest. That's right. Give it a rest. And then we've got some follow-up from our keyboard shortcuts discussion, and then depending on where we are and how we're feeling and how you're feeling, we may answer some of your questions and we'll go from there.
So, I feel good.
Ladies and gentlemen, guest hosting in place of John Braun, Mr. James Brown. No, huh? Sorry. So tell us about this show. Where you went to this show in New Delhi. Is that right, John?
No, I don't think that's in the budget. No, so this is a show called Digital Life.
Cheap. Hotels are cheap.
It's run by Ziff Davis, who you may have heard of. And apparently this is, it's the third year they've done it. It was running for 4 days. I went on the opening day, Thursday. It was at the Javits Center in New York City.
Yep.
Which is just a, a lovely little train ride from where I'm at.
Right.
And I hope they replace those trains someday, at least on our line. But anyway, so it's 4 days, and I went for the first day, where they had the keynote, and also they have this kind of special thing, which is nice, where they let the press and the VIPs loose on the floor a couple hours before the
huddled
masses.
That's
nice.
So you
kind of get a little FaceTime with the vendors, because sometimes that's really tough during some of the other shows we've been at to cut through the crowds.
So did you go to the keynote?
I went to the keynote. Well, they had a couple of keynotes. They had the first thing they had was kind of a panel of different vendors talking about where they saw the future of devices. It wasn't that interesting. But then they had the keynote by Microsoft, who seems to be one of the big sponsors of the show.
Okay,
it's, sponsoring all sorts of events, and I would say it's it's not a Windows only show, because obviously we'll link to some of the articles. There's plenty of vendors showing Mac stuff, not just iPod stuff. A lot of people we saw at PPME were there also, which was nice to see them again after only a couple of weeks. But basically, the guy was highlighting, what do they call this OS there?
Vista?
There you go.
Hey!
And basically, this was, the product manager for Vista, and he was basically telling the crowd about all the great stuff that's going to be in Vista that's just going to blow you away.
All right, so us being jaded Mac users, we'll accept that it's coming from that bent, but was there anything in Vista that actually impressed you? Because I asked this not as a setup. I mean, it's a great setup because it's not just you and me. It's our listening audience here and you. But I haven't spent a whole lot of time with Vista. In fact, I've spent no time with Vista. I've read a little bit about it, listened to different people talk about it. But for you, was there anything in it that either you knew about or didn't know about that impresses you still to this day about the upcoming Vista?
I wanted to start with things that didn't impress me, but I will start with the things that
Let's start high, and then we'll sink from there.
Okay.
Okay.
Some things that really caught my eye, I don't know if we're going to see them in Leopard or not, but so one thing is that it's very family-friendly.
Okay.
This is one thing that caught my eye, is you can set up user accounts with some very interesting limitations, especially for the kiddies.
Even more so than OS X?
Well, I don't know if OS X has a heck of a lot in there that really, really, based on a rating system, shield people from it. But they did have this in Vista.
Oh, yeah.
They would have ways, for example, if a game is rated a certain way, you can't play it. So
Oh, wow.
You know, so for the wee ones who you may not want them playing Doom or, you know, the other, you know, gore fests that
sure.
they have there.
Sure.
So it can limit, you know, the you know, to a certain extent, you know, sites people can go to. It will allow you, you know, to say, okay, you know, you can only play games at a certain level. So I thought that was interesting, and nothing that I've seen at least built into OS X. Now, I know they have products like Kids Go 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 and
right,
and a
right.
few other things that will add that to the Mac. So that was one thing that I think is at this point, you know, when they do release it, which it sounds like beginning of next year or end of this year.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure the exact date. So that caught my eye. That was very nice that they really put some thought into that. So if you have a shared machine, you can set up individual accounts and really tune what the person can and cannot see.
Interesting. Well, you know, in OS X, I mean, you can set which apps the kids can open, but you have to decide specifically which ones. And then, of course, with the web browser and you can set certain sites and limit things out that way. But that's interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that was nice. Yeah. Another thing I saw was, and this was just a really neat touch and something we've all run into. And this was more in, I guess, IE7, which is a Internet Explorer browser, which is coming up.
Yep.
They have a feature so that when you print a page, if it doesn't fit on the page, it'll fit it to the page. So when you print it out, and I've had this happen in Safari, and you probably have too. When you print out something on a web page, and what's on the right side runs over.
Yeah.
And it's like, why can't they fix that? And that would seem to be a pretty straightforward thing to do.
Safari does some of that, no?
Well, I still have web pages where I go to. If I just default and I just say print,
really,
I'll get stuff running off the right side.
Huh.
I don't know if it's just the pages are too big or, you know, they're not sizing it correctly. But that was a nice little touch.
That is nice, yeah.
They do have this new security feature. Now, of course, the thing is that you really kind of need this sort of thing with the you know, boatloads of malware and viruses
That's
and
right.
all this. Relative to the Mac, of course. But they had a very good example. Again, this was IE7, which you know, is kind of going to be paired with Vista, I guess, or it's going to be the default browser. The guy went through an example where he went to this web page, and it kept coming up with those warnings that, you know, when you use Windows, mostly you dismiss them. They're like, you know, unsigned control, and do you want to install this? Do you want to install that? And from what I can see, they're really creating what is kind of a sandbox, because the guy actually got to a point where the malware thought that it modified something in the OS, but from what I can see, and I'll have to read up on it, it creates a little sandbox. So the malware thinks that it destroyed something, but it actually didn't. So on the one hand, it's nice to have that feature. On the other hand, it's not nice that you have
that you need to have it. Sure, sure.
That you need to have it. So that was nice. And then also, from what I can see, Media Center is built into Vista. And I would say Media Center is probably on par and probably a little bit nicer, and they've had 4 years to go at it right now. So, you know, manages your music and your TV shows and stuff like that, and that's a part of it. Media Center looks pretty darn nice. I don't know why it really hasn't, at least my perception is it really hasn't taken off when compared to things like TiVo.
I think it will. You know, they've got the Media Center extender for Xbox, right? So if you own the Xbox, you then basically you've got the ITV functionality right there. I think with more, you know, more of that coming into place, I think it should take off. You're right. It's certainly the kind of thing that is out there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right.
Now, there was a whole bunch of stuff though that you looked at it and you're like, boy, that looks just like the Mac. The visuals, Spotlight search stuff, all sorts of things. There were a lot of familiar things. And, you know, no one company. I mean, they both borrow from one another.
Sure.
It's just
sure
because everybody's been waiting for so long for this thing.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
So I think, you know, Vista is going to be something, you know, it'll raise the bar.
That's good. And that's a good thing. Yeah.
Until Leopard comes out.
That's right. Yeah. And who knows? Leopard might be out before Vista is, right?
No,
I don't think
could
so.
Be.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't know if we'll see it at Macworld. I think we may see a version. Did you think they're going to release it?
At Macworld?
Have they given a ship date yet for it?
I think they said, you know, first part of 07. So, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so.
All right. About Windows, if you haven't already turned off the show.
That's right. And I turned off. I had the speakers on in the room. I'm an idiot. So about halfway through that, when you heard the echo go away, folks, that's why I caught that and turned it down. Yeah. But that's not what was causing what was going on before or during our sound check, John. But anyway, you said you saw some additional products there. What's something that you saw for the Mac that surprised you that you liked?
Let's see. For the Mac. Well, there were a lot of things that were cross-platform.
Okay.
Good. I would say probably one of the neater things was Belkin makes something called the Belkin Tune Stage 2.
Okay.
And basically what this is, now they already have a Tune Stage 1, so this is just an evolution of the product, but it's two pieces. It's a so it uses Bluetooth, and actually the newer product uses Bluetooth 2 EDR, which I believe is enhanced data rate.
Yep.
So it's faster throughput. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. But you get two pieces. So you get the receiver, and that hooks up to whatever audio system that you have. And then you have the transmitter that goes into your iPod.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the gist is that for about 30 feet, and from what I saw, it doesn't, you know, drain the battery. Like, you know, Bluetooth is, one of the nice things is that Bluetooth, you know, has some pretty modest power requirements.
So, right.
I think they say you can still go on, like on the Nano, I think your battery life goes down from like 12 hours to maybe 7 hours. So, but basically you plug this thing in your iPod and
so it cuts
you
it in
go,
half. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would seem. So, you know, not too bad. But you can basically boogie around with your iPod and, you know, wherever you happen to be, and you install this receiver. The nice thing is that the receiver can also pair with other things. So, because it supports something.
Right.
Called A2DP.
Yep.
Which is, Advanced Audio Distribution Profile. So it's not just the iPod. So you can use other things to talk to this. So so this opens up, and I know a lot of vehicles now are starting to do this, where they will have Bluetooth audio interfaces. So
and I think that's what cell phones use too, right?
Yes, they said that, yes. So if you have a cell phone that supports this Bluetooth profile, you could also use that to send things to this. So Bluetooth really seems to be the way to go as far as the wireless audio.
Now, the interesting part here is that Tiger does not support A2DP, I don't believe, but Leopard definitely does. The DP release of Leopard already has it in it. So so that's also an interesting little tidbit there. Of course, with 30 feet, it doesn't give you quite what you need to really make it work, you know, from wherever your Mac might be in the house to your TV. That would still require an airport like thing, but still interesting nonetheless. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and the transmitter, I would imagine, if you have a properly equipped vehicle, you could use your iPod to talk to your vehicle's audio system.
Right, very cool. So, okay, so that was not really a Mac thing though, right? That's an iPod thing. So what do you have that actually runs on the Mac that you saw at the show that's cool?
Well, you know, actually looking at this stuff, I don't know if anything here is.
I do. Ooh, I know. I want you to tell me about McAfee Site Advisor.
Not quite Mac. I'll qualify it. It runs on Firefox.
Right. Okay.
Which is Mac and, okay, so I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so McAfee, and this is something that they actually acquired the company a little while ago. So Site Advisor is something that, it is cross-platform. Unfortunately, it's not working on Safari right now. I believe it runs on Internet Explorer on Windows. Because the Mac version is, you know.
I think it only works with Firefox. I don't know that it works with IE.
I looked on
IE.
Their site, and I think they said they're thinking of IE.
Okay,
of course,
yeah.
IE is dead on the Mac, so.
Right.
But it's an add-on to Firefox, which is, you know, a top-notch browser, in my opinion. I really like it.
Yep.
Next to Safari, of course. So what it will do is, so they basically have a team of people that will go to websites and basically kind of profile them to kind of help you understand, you know, what's going to happen when you go to the site. And of course, you know, sites such as Mac Observer and iPod Observer, you know, come away with, you know, are just great. You know, they will warn you. I actually saw, you know, a portion where in Google, if you, you know, search for sites and all that, it'll kind of parse that and put a little symbol next to the site warning you. It'll be either like, you know, green, yellow, or red.
Okay.
And they'll advise you on nasty things like pop-ups,
really?
Like malware, software that you download from the site, is it virus laden or malware or stuff like that? And also, here's a neat thing too, if you give your email address to the site, are they going to be honest with it? So I guess what they do is they create one-time email addresses, sure, and then they find out if it's been, you know, released to the world.
Yeah.
Or if the site, and of course, you know, TMO, I believe we, you know, have an email newsletter.
We do.
And,
yep,
you know, and they check this out, and you're the only person that, you know, gets the email from us.
That's right.
We do not
share that stuff with anyone. That's right.
So we could profit greatly. We resist the temptation.
We do resist the temptation. Actually, we do. There's constantly people, you know, offering to pay us for that. But it's a path that we haven't even begun to head down. It's just, well, I mean, it's not worth it. You know,
it's just not the right thing to do.
No. And I mean, I agree with you. It's not the right thing to do. On top of that, from a strictly, you know, business standpoint, the one-time sellout that we'd get from selling that list would come back to haunt us many, many, many times over, even if we did believe in doing it, which, again, for the record, we don't. But, it, you know, I mean, all you folks would hate us, and rightly so. So, you know, it's just not our shtick, if you will.
And they show other sites that, you know, the site in question commonly links to. So, for example, you'll see the Mac Observer. When I looked, you know, links to Apple.com, the...
Right.
You know, links to iPod Observer and, you know, recent things. So you can kind of get an idea of, you know, what other sites, what network are they part of?
Very cool.
So pretty neat stuff. And it's free. And
right.
I imagine the incentive is that, you know, on the page, McAfee advertises some of their other fine software products.
Of course.
Though I think they still have antivirus for Mac, though I don't know how current it is or how much you need it.
I still, to this day, do not run virus software on my Mac. I know that it's altogether likely that that day will come, but or will come again, I should say, right? Because back in the OS 9, actually, even before OS 9, in the OS 7 days, we were all running disinfectant, but that's pretty much been end of life. Its need is expired. So.
Time has passed.
That's right. All right. So something else. One other thing that you saw at the show.
All right. One other thing would be the goodies from Maxter.
Okay.
Which you know, I think was recently bought by Seagate, but they still maintain the Maxter name.
Yeah.
And they had a bunch. Now they have the big kahuna of drives here.
Okay.
1.5 terabyte.
In one drive, or is it an enclosure?
Two drives. Enclosure.
Okay.
Kind of chunky, but 1.5 terabyte. I mean, I never thought I'd be saying terabyte.
Yeah. That's
terabyte.
That's a lot. I know. You know, my first hard drive was 40 megabytes. Not gigabytes. Megabytes. And that was the upgrade, right? I mean, I had the world by the short hairs there.
So that was neat. And then a couple of their other drive products, which I think are hinting at a trend here. So they have another line called Shared Storage 2, which would fall into this category I would call NAS, Network Attached Storage.
Okay.
Which, for the most part, to describe it in a nutshell, is basically like a little file server. Because it doesn't have a FireWire or a USB port. It's a...
Ethernet.
Ethernet. And in this case, Gigabit Ethernet.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think what they do is they probably basically put a little SMB stack in there, you know, or Apple Talk. I would imagine SMB or some file sharing thing.
Right.
And it's basically a very quick way to put a nice little file server without having to set up a file server.
Cool.
So that was another product I noticed. And then they have something that it even builds beyond that, and they call it Fusion.
Okay.
So it's not only a network device, but it has some software in it, and especially now with the browsers supporting things like Ajax, asynchronous Java, and XML, I think that's...
Thank you, sir. Yeah, that's right.
Web apps are getting a lot more like real apps, and basically it's a little media center. So you can upload pictures, you can upload music.
Oh, wow.
You can group them, you can share them with others. So say you put a hole in your firewall to allow web access to it. So it's like a network drive, but it's tuned to media sharing. And again, this is cross-platform, and they call it Fusion.
Okay.
I think that's pretty slick, too. So I think it's really neat that the trend for drives is that they're much more than drives now, is that they're adding more useful things on top of them, and it looks to me that Maxter is one of the companies
that's... Well, at a terabyte and a half, that's pretty big. And what is it? It's like $800 for the 1.5 terabyte unit. Isn't that right?
Was it?
So,
I thought it was a little less. Yeah, $799.
Yeah. So that is
retail.
A little less than $800. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's just a whopping amount of space there. But, you know, with the files, you know, especially we're now talking HD movies and, you know, things like that, you may need it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think so.
You may want it.
Yeah.
You want it.
You want it. Of course I want it. Yeah. Because I could tuck it somewhere. You know, I've got Ethernet ports everywhere. In fact, I got Ethernet ports in the basement of my office. I could just tuck it away down there and forget about it. It'd be cool.
So, good show. I think for both Mac people, Windows people, or just people that want to see what's out there as far as you know, electronic devices that are part of your digital life. The show, I think it's a good show to check out. And you know, you can get it this time around. If you entered the code was Insider, you could get a free pass, and you shouldn't have to pay to get into these sort of things. Not that we have to, but
right.
Yeah, so it was good stuff. Maybe we'll get a couple more folks to do a bit more coverage next year. Who knows?
Cool.
So I liked it, and I got to hang with some friends, and then afterwards I did some,
personal stuff,
lunch or dinner up around Columbia.
Oh, cool.
Some friends there.
Cool.
This little nice little diner with all sorts of Asian fare. So, anyways,
awesome.
What's next?
You know, I got an email today from Kenneth, and you know, we have this little thing this little segment that we do every now and then called Cool Apps that either we or you found. And this is indeed a cool app. It's called SMC Fan Control, and it lets you cool off your Intel-based iMac or MacBook or MacBook Pro. And it's a very simple app in design. What they've done is they've figured out how to control the minimum speed of the fan inside your computer. And actually, there's two fans, at least inside the MacBook Pro. And I ran this thing, and presumably, actually, they've figured out how to do everything, including shut off the fans, but they won't release an app that does that because who would want to actually shut off the fans? You know, it just burn you out. So Apple runs the fans. Their spec says that they go from 1,000 RPM to 6,000. So 1,000 is the minimum the fan will run, and then 6,000 is the max. You can change that minimum all the way up to 6,000. So I did a little experiment today. My machine was running at about 68 degrees centigrade, and I cranked the fans up to 6,000. And it took about 10 seconds for them to fully ramp up, and it shows you what speed they're running at currently, so you can kind of monitor this. And at 10 seconds later, so at the 20-second mark, the temperature was already down 10 degrees to 57 degrees centigrade, and the top kind of above the keyboard there was now room temperature. It had actually, you know, dissipated all the heat off of that, and it wasn't burning me anymore. After another 40 seconds, at the 60-second mark, it was down 15 degrees to about 52 degrees centigrade. At the 90-second mark, it was down 20 degrees to 47, and then I let it run for a little while, and it actually got all the way down into the low 40s. Now, this is with the machine running at approximately half load on both cores. So not, you know, not full tilt, but very rarely do most of us run full tilt 100% of the time. So I was trying to run a couple of things. I had some YouTube videos going as I was testing this. But of course, the fan's running a lot. Both fans are. It's loud at 6,000 RPM and presumably also drains, you know, battery life. So I started playing around with it. I set it to 3K, so, you know, half of the maximum. And that quieted it down quite a bit. And even that held it at 50 degrees centigrade. It wouldn't really go above that. I then throttled it down to 2K. So really only 1,000 RPM, double the RPM of the default. And that held it at 60K. And then, of course, back down at 1, it clocked up nearly near 70. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, speaking of fan speed and temperatures, this is a
finish that. It's SMC Fan Control, and I'll put a link in the show notes for it. But there you go. So yes, speaking of fans, John,
another thing that was suggested, and actually something I've been running for a while, but we didn't mention it along with, you know, our must have apps. But there's a nice little dashboard widget. Well, what are they called?
Call it a widget.
Called iStat Pro.
Yep.
Have you used this? There's a junior one. I think iStat Nano, which doesn't tell you a lot.
Okay.
This tells you everything. And at least on my G5, my dual G5 here, it will tell me the temperature of all of the temperature sensors. But then even more fascinating, it tells me the RPM of each individual fan.
Now, does this work with the Intel stuff? Because I know that they were having a hard time getting those sensors to report, at least anywhere through the Mac. So
don't have an Intel Mac, so right. I couldn't run the thing that you just talked about, because I tried to run it.
Sure. Yeah.
So I do not know, but it definitely, okay. You know, of course, works. But it's nice. It tells you that. It tells you all sorts of stuff. We'll put a link to that as well. But it's a very nice tool. The only downside is, I guess, it's a dashboard.
Right. Thing. Right. All right. Well, let's move on and let's move on to our keyboard shortcut discussion from last week. We had quite a bit of follow-up feedback from that, and we'll let Jim, who had a question for us last week, talk about something, and then we'll follow up with something else we got.
Hi, John and Dave. This is Jim again. Thank you for highlighting my call and talking about the scroll lock key. Haven't found a problem, found an issue to fix that problem yet. One of the things I also teach, it's on Mac, and one of the short keyboard shortcuts that I use most often is, one, I do Apple Shift A and have the kids type the first few letters of the application. That goes right to the applications folder. If I type in the first two letters of the application, it goes right to and highlights that letter for them. That works with the folders in the Finder. And that one is I use pretty often. The other one is Apple Shift U. If I go into Apple Shift U, I go right to the utilities folder. Apple K goes right to the browser so that I can search the network. Those are the three that I use most often, along with Apple Q, Apple Shift Q to log out. But just teaching the kids and those sort of things, that's what I use. Thank you very much. Have a good one. Bye.
Okay, so just to thank you, Jim. Just to be clear, those three keystrokes that he talked about, Command Shift A, Command Shift U, and Command K, that's all Finder based stuff. So you can't do that from within, say, iTunes and have it jump you to your applications folder.
Right. And if you want to see a couple of others, and I saw where he got him, if you go to the Go menu.
Yep.
In the Finder.
Yep. That's right.
A couple others like computer, home, iDisk. But very handy. I had not really really paid attention to those. So that's a nice way to zip around.
Now Jim had mentioned that he was having an issue last week, and he referenced it again this week with his Belkin KVM switch, where the scroll lock key was causing it to reboot Macs. We got a note from Bill, and Bill said, you know, it drives him crazy. He's a consultant. He says it drives him crazy, though it, of course, drives him business, when people don't really try and solve their problems themselves. Now, it's interesting because Jim seems like a fairly knowledgeable guy here and clearly has tried to solve this problem. But doing a search for Belkin KVM Scroll Lock Macintosh yields a Mac OS X Hints forum message that details this problem and its solution in its entirety. And without going through it, we'll just put a link to it in the show notes so that anyone out there who's looking for this can find it. And I'll actually go back and put it in last week's show notes too, just to increase the Google mojo on it. But
mojo.
The Google, yeah, mojo.
Right? You know, I got to say, some sites don't really have areas where it's too easy to find a solution to your problem. So I don't know if
that's
it was
true.
Just buried in the bowels of Belkin it was.
Oh,
it
no,
was
no, no. It's not at Belkin's site.
Sorry.
It's a Mac OS X Hints forum discussion about the problem, but searching for it that way in Google seemed to work. But no, I don't think there was anything at the Belkin site specifically about it. So,
because Google makes everybody smart.
It does. Or at least it makes you seem smart. Now, a lot of you smart people wrote in about an app called Quicksilver that I tried last year when, again, a lot of you wrote in about it. And said, wow, I can't believe you talked about keyboard shortcuts or shortcuts in general and didn't mention Quicksilver. And so I went again and said, okay, let me check this thing out. And what it does is it, and I know that all you Quicksilver people are going to scream about this, so trust me, just bear with me here. Similar to Spotlight, gives you a one keystroke access to a palette, if you will. And then you start typing. Once it finds things, similar to Spotlight, although from what I could see, it was a lot faster than Spotlight. Once it finds things, you can simply open them or apply a multitude of different actions to them. So you can open it or, depending on what it is, they're all context sensitive. You can you know, open it up or add it as a bookmark. You can email it. You can copy it. It's got hooks for transmit, so you can use it to FTP things. Very, very cool. And the way that it searches the you know, with Safari, with Safari, the cold's getting to me. With Spotlight, the characters that you type all have to pretty much be together in order for Spotlight to find it. With this, it was finding things in a very, very fluid way. Very cool. So it wasn't even so much that typing the phrase was what you were looking for. You're just kind of hitting related keystrokes related to what you're looking for, and it came up with this stuff. So very, very cool. Difficult to explain. You got to go check it out and walk through it a little bit to see if you can't kind of grok what it's about there.
And you know, the one little comment, but
yeah.
I don't put the word Spotlight and fluid in the same sentence usually.
No.
It's probably my one complaint about Spotlight. It's that it's spastic.
Yeah, Spotlight is not jumpy. As fluid as Quicksilver. That's the sentence that it goes into.
The only thing that, I'd like to see in the next version of OS X is that they made Spotlight just a little smoother.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's surprise. You'll see something and you're like, oh, it found it. And then you try to click on it and
you can't.
It goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Mm-hmm. The other app that lots and lots and lots of you mentioned was Butler, which, and I think I'm grokking this right. I spent, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes with it today. So if I totally missed the point, tell me. But it adds two little menu bars up that one of them is basically an app launcher-ish menu bar that you can configure. And it also lists open apps and that sort of thing. And then the other is I'll call it an internet menu item where you can search things, you can look things up. It's got all kinds of links to different search engines, and you can type right there in the menu bar and have it search Google and that sort of thing. A lot of people talked about this, said it, you know, it saves them a lot of time. So if I'm missing something with Butler, please, please send in an audio comment, you know, and explain it for us and for the benefit of you listening as well. Because I always hate to miss the point of an app. So if I missed Quicksilver, if there's something even better about Quicksilver, tell us about that too.
It was the butler with the candlestick in the study.
Very nice. And one thing that we did miss last week, which I can't believe, because you and I, because of where we came from, is this.
Being veterans.
The veterans. Oops, wrong one. Here we go.
Hey guys, just listening to your latest podcast, and you were talking about keyboard shortcuts, and you were describing the names of the different keys, and the one in particular that you missed was for the command or Apple key. Us old school people like myself, I started on a 2GS as my first Apple computer, and I still refer to it as Open Apple. So anyway, just wanted to drop that little note, and love the show. Talk to you guys later.
All right, now this gets really geeky because, well, that's what the show is. He's right. It on the GS we had Open Apple, the Apple with the black outline with you know, white presumably in the middle, like we see on the Mac, and then there was Closed Apple, which was the same thing but solid. Or sometimes it was called Solid Apple, but I pretty much remember it being Open Apple and Closed Apple. Then when we came to the Mac, there was no Apple on the command key. It was something completely different. A short time later, Apple started putting the Apple back on there to kind of maintain the consistency of experience from the people that were using the more windowed apps. Mouse? What was the name of that word processor in ProDOS? On the GS, was that MouseWorks? Micro, man, I can't remember it. But it was a GUI word processor, and it used a lot of Apple commands, Open Apple, you know, to open files and that sort of thing. So they wanted to preserve that workflow, and so there it was. It wasn't just that app; it was other apps too.
So they started with what? Just the Clover?
Yep.
On the first Macs?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Which everybody was like, "What the heck is that?"
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, people looked at the Mac and said, "What the heck is that?" Right?
I mean, right.
To
right.
be fair, so it's not like it was, "Wow, this is all so familiar," except for this weird key. No, it was, you know, this was an alien machine. So, yeah.
Did they have this on the 2E, the open and closed, or was the GS the first one?
I know I had it on my 2C.
Yeah, I think the 2A may have had it.
I think so. I think it
that was my
been.
First. That was my first machine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it 2E. Did. Yeah, I think the 2E is certain. I think it did. I think it did. Have to find
all right, good
a
tips.
Picture. Yeah. One other thing to clarify that that McKay found was when you're doing Command Tab to look through all your apps, if you hit the Q key, as John pointed out, you can quit apps. H will actually hide the currently selected app, and that way you can kind of clean up your workspace. To take that one step further, if you're navigating through the Finder and use Command O to open an app, if you use, say, the shortcut from Jim before and you hit, you know, Command A or Command Shift A rather to get to the apps folder, you navigate through to the app and then Command O to open it. If you want your Finder windows to close behind you, if you hold down the Option key, so Command Option O, bam, it will close the window and open the app. So for those
and the one
you,
I found,
yeah,
it's not Apple Shift Tilde, it's just Apple Tilde.
That's right.
Circulate among the windows. Yeah. It works if you hold down Shift, but you don't have
right.
to.
Which means it's not Tilde at all, right? It's backwards.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Apostrophe. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you call
that. Whatever you call that key.
It's just because I know what the Tilde is, and I don't know what the other thing is.
That's right.
Reverse quote, maybe? Is that what it's called?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Could be.
Whatever.
All right, so we have a comment here from someone that I wasn't going to play when I first heard it, but it's just so darned ironic that I have to. And you know, I think we're just gonna let it play. And if you get the joke on top of the joke, because there's a joke explained in this, and this has to do with our error between the chair and the keyboard. Well, we'll see if we can hold our mouths shut. So here we go.
You were talking about errors, and you had a saying that there's a there's an error between the seat and the keyboard, and I used to do a little bit of tech support myself, and we had a little saying whenever we came across a user error, and this was not quite a genius bar where we would say this, but there would be a team of us all reviewing products that have been coming in for repair, and if the customer was on the other side of the counter, we would just say it's an ID10T error to each other. And, of course, the customer wouldn't understand what we were talking about, but it was our inside joke. And what an ID10T error is I ask you to get a little piece of paper and write this down while I tell you. It's write these numbers and letters down, and you'll get it. The letter I, as in Enigma, the letter D, as in David, then the number 10, so 10, and then finally the letter T, as in Thomas. And you will understand exactly what an ID10T error is. Anyway, I just let you in on the inside joke. Thanks.
I got to think that was
is
intentional.
In Enigma. Right? Did you get that? I is an enigma. D is in David. 1.
I can only imagine that
T is in Tom. We'll just let that go. That's right.
I think he must have done that just to be extra funny.
I only hope so. But we kept his or her name out of it just to protect the
to avoid severe embarrassment.
That's right.
Are you ready?
As in enigma.
Oh my gosh! Time just flies when we're Gavin.
That's right. You know, we have that Frapper map, so go ahead and add your pin to it. And I got to give a shout out to Corey and all the folks at the Mac OSG podcast. And the Frapper map reminded me of it. We had a great time hanging out with them at PME at the pool party barbecue thing. And so I just wanted to say hi to Corey. If you're looking for another Mac podcast, go check that one out. Those guys have a lot of fun. There's 5 of them, so some of you may not like that many people.
Chaos.
It's not chaos, though. That's the thing. They do a good job. So, hi, Corey. And In addition to the Frapper map, what do we do? Well, we have nation states that we're playing, and things are getting interesting on nation states. We've actually got some people making a play for the delegate option with the with our nation or with our region, which is which basically gives you some voting power at the United Nations, and also depending on how much status you have, you can throw people out if you're the delegate. We've kept the delegate thing. It hasn't been outside of what I'll say our inner circle of just people that, that we know personally. I've had it at a time. My brother's had it. It's kind of bounced around. But there's someone...
He was actually asking me to... I don't know.
I'll talk to you later. I'll talk to you later about it. But yeah, it's gotten interesting. So if you are going to get the delegate, that's great. But, you know, just don't start throwing people out. That's just not cool. And I understand that there's someone out there impersonating me, you know, telling people that they are me. And I'm not going to say who they are. Yeah.
Unacceptable. Now, my nation's developing space weapons. I'm having a lot of fun.
Oh, that's good. You know me. I'm going for the anarchy. I'm trying. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to get.
And the space weapons aren't quite perfected, so I don't. So for the people that I've given them to, just be careful. You may toast your own nation. That would be sad.
So next week we've got a ton of feedback to go through, of course, and so that's that. We'll cover that, and of course anything you folks send in between now and then will be covered as well. Cashfly Hosting is where you've downloaded this podcast. On our podcast marketplace this month, we've got this 6i Isolator earphones from Edemotic, the A5 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, and TeachMac from TeachMac.com.
Wow. You know what I hear, Dave? I hear that we're part of the Backbeat Media Podcast Network.
We are part of the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Proud members,
excellent.
Even. That's right. And I think that's it. We
always want the comments. iTunes, Podcast Alley. Yeah. Let us know what you think.
Please. We love hearing what you think about what we do here. Positive, negative, and everything in between.
Yeah, and we'll play the positive ones.
We will. Gmail invites, we still got some. 206-666-GEEK, MacGeekGab at MacObserver.com. Skype your messages to MacGeekGab. Check out the show notes at MacGeekGab.com. And if you had some advice for him, what would it be?
Don't get caught.
Exactly.
Made up.